This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
It does sound good for the next few days to get field work done in our region. And there were a couple of days this week, it was just swell to be outside. I would imagine some of you who had jobs inside wanted to, or perhaps followed through on a little playing hooky. Because when it gets to this time of the year, and especially we get to seeing some color in the trees, the beauty, the fleeting season, when we see a little bit of beauty yet in the trees and it goes so quickly, you want to take advantage of it, to be sure. Big O slipped away this week. We'll have a report from him momentarily to find out what in the world he was doing. It has been National Farm Safety and Health Week, and our friend Kristen Decker, the pride of Iroquois County, Illinois, has a story coming on that in just a few minutes. She visits with a friend of ours who helped put signs out in his county to call attention to the fact that farmers are along the roads this time of year moving big equipment, slow equipment, hard-to-maneuver equipment, and you need to be careful not to tangle with that stuff for sure. Jim Fazell comes in just a few minutes as we wind down this growing season, too. I want to come back to what I was discussing with Matt, though. The Achilles heel that this nation has in its transportation system. And some of these things that we talk about, Orion and I visit about with you on these broadcasts, don't have easy, quick fixes. When you look at the railroad system in the United States now and its crowded situation and the lack of ability to move all of the other freight that needs to be moved along with that oil that's coming out of the Bakken region of North Dakota, all of that moving down the rail lines and the need to get more locomotive capacity in place, get the cars where they are needed. Farmers have especially had a serious challenge moving grain in the northern plains area of the Dakotas. It could have spillover into parts of the Corn Belt this year, many of the experts that we talk to have been saying. Kind of depends on what railroad you have. If it's the Burlington Northern Santa Fe, the biggest grain-hauling railroad in the country, and it needs to go west, or the Union Pacific and the grain needs to go west, that could be a problem. If you're on the Norfolk Southern, for example, as many elevators are in east central Illinois and down through central Indiana, that's not quite the problem because that movement tends to be typically grains down toward the southeast, toward the poultry region of the United States. But certainly the rails need attention. And then there's the river system, as we've talked so often, those lock and dam facilities, the fix there will take decades. It takes years to do that replacement work, and that needs to be moving on quickly, as quick as possible, because that, although we never think about it, it's out of sight, out of mind, unless you're out there on a boat in a recreational activity on the rivers, you don't think about the lock facilities, but the rest of us ought to, because that's where the road salt for Chicago and suburbs comes in. That's also how fertilizer is hauled. Oil is hauled there as well, and refined products. And certainly the grains that we need to move into the export channels move on the river system. But then you get to the transportation system. And to have two incidents in 5 months in the Chicago area in air traffic control facilities, and it just paralyzed, of course, totally shut down, the air travel, especially commercial air travel, right here in the heart of the country, and has a ripple effect all over the United States. And there's no redundancy for these facilities. There's no way to go to a separate building immediately, fire up the equipment, and get things going in a matter of that is just crazy. Hopefully somebody in Washington will awaken and say, wait a minute. This is a relatively, in the whole scheme of things and the billions that government spends, inexpensive thing to fix. Radio stations have redundancy, as I pointed out. Many corporations that have essential services, hospitals have backup power capabilities. And I'm sure there's backup power at those air traffic control centers, but why not have a separate, dedicated facility sitting there ready to go, especially in this crucial region of the country where air travel for the entire nation is affected? Oh, all right, off the soapbox, pal, because Orion will come along with his own commentary in just a few minutes, to be sure. Well, I tell you what, let's see what's on Big O's mind, where he's been, what he's doing, people he's been meeting. Check in, Orion, from somewhere out there.
Well, Max, as you know, I've been spending the week working from Arizona this week, where the weather has, well, been maybe almost as nice as in the Midwest. We've had sunshine every day, not a cloud in the sky, and temperatures in the 90s, touching 100 a couple of days. But I try to spend this weekend in Arizona every year because about 3 years ago, we attended a function called the Yavapai County Cattle Growers Club Calf Sale and Beef Barbecue. It's kind of a one-day county fair. It's held on the Mon West Fork Ranch in Peoples Valley, Arizona. That's about 100 miles north and a little bit west of Phoenix. It's a scenic part of Arizona. And on the ranch itself, they have a permanent barbecue pit dug into the ground. And on Friday at noon, they'll throw 30-pound chunks of beef, totaling 1,500 pounds, into that barbecue pit. They'll cover it with a steel sheet and dirt. And then today at noontime, they'll uncover it, and about 1,500 people will enjoy some fine Arizona beef. It's something that's been happening for, I think this is the 90th year, 89th or 90th year. It was started that long ago because they wanted to support the National Cattlemen's Association, and it was having financial challenges. And so the Yavapai County, one county, decided they would do their bit to help the financial situation. And so they held the calf sale and the barbecue, and the proceeds went to the National Cattlemen's Association, which today is known as the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. It's a one-day county fair. There are vendors there. There's a fella I've visited with every year I've been there who does homemade ice cream. He uses a one-cylinder engine to turn the ice cream freezer. And a lot of Indian jewelry, turquoise jewelry, and some Western artwork. They have a mutton-busting competition for the kids where kids ride sheep rodeo style, and then they sell some very top quality calves as well that 4-H and FFA kids are then able to take to the fair and to the various livestock shows. So that's what I'll be doing today, and it's a fun event. Andy Grossetta, who was president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association several years ago, is deeply involved in that. He and his fourth generation of family ranchers are a big part of the event, so we look forward to getting together with him. The other comment I would make about Arizona is, as you know, they had those heavy one-day downpours, some record rains a few weeks ago. As I've been saying about the Midwest, I've never seen the Midwest more lush and green in September going into October than this year. Well, I've been traveling to Arizona for, since 1986, and I can't remember a time when it looks as lush and green here. It's a good time for cattle producers, particularly those raising the calves for feeder cattle that eventually go into the feedlots. And so I'm sure today I'll see some smiling faces on the cattlemen who turn out for the Yavapai County Club Calf Sale and Beef Barbecue. See you back in Chicago next week, Max.
All right, Big O. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Also on his dance card, I think, is World Dairy Expo, if I'm not mistaken. That's coming up in the week ahead in Madison, Wisconsin. I believe they start the activities up there Tuesday or Wednesday. I know Big O plans on being up there, I think, on Thursday for World Dairy Expo. That is such a big effort. And, of course, the public in that area around Madison, Wisconsin, really embraces it. A lot of people will come out, even though they have no interest specifically from a production standpoint in the dairy business. They'll come out to see the cows and bring the family out to see the cows. But when you bring those cows in from all over the world, and they have to check, of course, the health papers on all of those cows to make sure that there is no disease that is spread among those extremely valuable bovines. And I understand it's quite an effort of the ag students, the veterinary medical students, specifically at the University of Wisconsin, who volunteer their time, hour after hour it takes, to check in those cows and to verify their health records. And so we take our hat off to them for helping make that big event possible. Madison, Wisconsin. More coming up on the Saturday Morning Show at 17 past 5. Here alongside me in the studio today is Tim Hines, product manager from Raven, and we're going to talk about SmartTrax MD from Raven.
That's right, Max. Growers have been really excited about the SmartTrax MD steering system because it's so simple. It's movable between equipment of different sizes and colors. You can use it on tractors, sprayers, combines, and more.
So it's a really versatile product then.
Exactly. SmartTrax MD is easy to use, but it delivers very high-grade performance. For growers who may have had a tough year, who don't want to invest in new iron, they can make a much smaller investment in SmartTrax MD, and it can boost yields and profits for the following year.
Now that's a smart move. How can people learn more about this product, Tim?
Visit ravenprecision.com to learn about SmartTrax MD and Raven's other precision products, or call us at 1-800-243-5435.
RavenPrecision.com. That's RavenPrecision.com. Well, this is that time of the year when we're out on the roads and you see a lot of equipment moving, the big combines and the grain carts being pulled out there, tillage tools sticking out behind the tractors going from one field to another. It is big equipment. It is heavy equipment. Farmers have the right to be out there, and they have to be there, of course, to move from field to field, but there's that ever-present danger. There's one particular county in our area where they've really tried aggressively to do something about that in terms of creating awareness, and our Kristen Decker has the story on that this morning.
Max, we're just wrapping up Farm Safety and Health Week, and joining me on the WGN Radio Saturday Morning Show is Robert Wilchinski. He's an auditor over there in Porter County, Indiana, where they've created a campaign that creates public awareness for those that are farming. Bob, tell me what you have going on over there in Porter County.
About 10 years ago, we went ahead and founded the Take Care We're Farming Around Here public safety program. And what the program was created to do was to basically create public awareness, educate the folks that may be new to the farming community in terms of where their residence is located, that people are actively farming this land, and they need to share the road with everybody during all year long, but certainly during planting and harvest. And we need to be aware, take care, and above all, be patient as we share the road in farming communities around Porter County. We founded the program in 2003, and about 2004, 2005, we started putting up the now famous roadway signs that say, take care, we're farming around here, and you know, provide an active information source along the highways and byways of Porter County. We also have radio spots and handouts that we put out in the high schools to the new drivers, you know, that are coming out in the community and learning how to drive so that they're sensitive to it, too. One thing we noticed was that in the driver's manuals, there was precious little about information about farm safety in terms of, single-passenger vehicular traffic coexisting or commingling with farm traffic. So we sort of make it an insert in all of the classes afforded at the high schools, and anywhere we can get the information out at the local trustees' offices and the townships, we do so so that folks are aware of it. You know, the best time to get people, Kristen, or educate them is when they're first getting started. As people mature, they're a little tougher to get to. So we work to try to get to the youngins right away when they're learning how to drive, and let them know that, hey, when you're interacting with farm equipment, you know, the rules are a little bit different. Be patient, slow down, understand the constraints of farm equipment relative to a single passenger vehicle.
And this program has been a success?
Well, we believe so. The first question that we get out of a lot of folks is how many accidents were there and how many aren't there now since the program went into effect. And what our point is always, you know, for once, we can, if we can introduce a program that proactively provides for public safety and keeps the unthinkable from occurring, then isn't that as much or more of a success than waiting and reacting to, you know, the unthinkable or tragedy occurring on a country road because, you know, a single passenger vehicle got into an entanglement with a piece of farm equipment, farm machinery. And so from our perspective, it has been a success because we haven't had, certainly since the program went through its inception, we haven't had a case where there's been a fatality or a major injury related to, agriculture vehicle versus single passenger vehicle. So I'll call it a proactive success. That's how I'll coin the phrase, and we're proud of that.
Well, Robert, we sure thank you folks over there in Porter County, Indiana, and especially you for spearheading this program and taking agriculture and the safety of the public and those in agriculture so seriously.
Well, it's my pleasure to join you, and I thank you so much for reaching out and spending some time with us.
Max?
All right, Kristen, thank you. Appreciate that. And we thank Bob Wyczlinski for sending us one of those signs several months back. It's neat, and businesses have embraced it too there in Porter County, and it's a great effort. So maybe you never know. Maybe it has made a significant difference there in the community in terms of safety of motorists. Last week, we were talking a little bit, and I mentioned I wanted to hold this off and share it because I didn't have time to run it last week, about the business of government affairs as far as farmers are concerned, working with Congress. And we all need to realize that Congress does, and the White House, of course, exert tremendous power over our lives. Whatever they do out there does have a significant effect. And that's especially true in agriculture. And then there are the regulatory agencies, too, that have an effect on all of business and industry. And I talked the other day with a gentleman by the name of Jay Truitt. He was in town for the fall conference of the National Agri-Marketing Association. We stood on the street outside the Hotel Chicago and talked for a little bit about working with Congress, and he pointed out how important it is for the men and women on farms, as well as others involved in business, to be communicating with Congress. Here's what Jay said about it.
There literally is no single factor in the development of public policy that's more important than just the average guy that thinks that he doesn't really have a voice, making sure that his voice is heard. And there's a lot of ways for him to do that, but really there's nothing better than making sure that you develop those relationships with members of Congress, work through the associations that you have available to you and all the vehicles that are there. Everybody has a lot of them available. We don't like to spend the time to do it, and it takes a lot of time. But we all like to complain about the impact of government on our life, but we don't want to spend the few hours a year that it really would take for us to be a part of that process. There literally is nothing more important to a politician, though, or a decision maker in Washington, D.C., than his constituent back home that actually votes or doesn't vote for him.
Let me ask you about political action committees. PACs have become a way of life. I think farmers might find it an onerous process to be involved in. Do they need to be?
I think every producer should be engaged in the political activity that takes place. And, you know, you can do that in a lot of different ways. It doesn't have to be just through dollars that you give to a PAC that represents your viewpoints. Make sure that you engage in the process inside your associations so that they really are doing what you want them to do. But more importantly, almost all farmers ought to be engaged in something at home. Every politician in Washington, D.C., the next week or so is trying to figure out how to get home and campaign. Be a host for them. Figure out a way to actually have them out to your place. They love that photo op that comes with them, you know, out in front of a combine or a tractor or a bunch of kids on a wagon and a bunch of straw bales. Make it happen for them. They'll never forget. You'll never forget. And it gives you a way to talk to those members that you've never had before.
That's Jay Truitt, governmental affairs expert. He works with agriculture groups with some very good advice there. Doesn't make any difference if you farm, if you produce corn or soybeans, or you've got a widget plant in Rockford, or you own a doohickey assembly plant in Kenosha. All of the regulations that affect you and the laws that affect you, you can have input in that process, Jay Truitt says, and you ought to be trying to do that. We'll have a news update coming up here on the Saturday morning show from WGN. Sounds like it'll be a great day. The Von Bergens out at their market, Hebron, Illinois, they have their plow day today, plow day and tractor show. If you like to see the old tractors swing by out there, Route 173, I believe it is, out there near Hebron. I've been there a couple of years. I think this is the 16th year they've done this. And I believe I was there the first year and another 1 or 2 years. But they'll have the tractor show starting at 9 o'clock, the old tractors, and then they start plowing with them at 9, too. And there are various other activities for the entire family there at Von Bergen's Market. Mel and Bobette. Mel and Bobette are just a couple of great examples of farmers in our region. And Mel is a master farmer, honored by Prairie Farmer magazine, I believe, 2012, a couple of years ago. Yeah, I think so. So if you get there today, tell them I said hello. Big O, back with us again this morning. Well, let's see what he's really thinking about in terms of his commentary on the Saturday Morning Show. Orion?
Welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. Hello, everyone. I'm Orion Samuelson, and this week, saying let's put the food versus fuel myth to bed once and for all. I'll talk about it in a moment, but if you need an easy way to keep your toilet bowls rust-free, there's one answer. It's Rust Guard. Rust Guard is the in-tank toilet bowl cleaner that protects against rust and hard water stains with every flush. It does the job better than any other, so just drop one Rust Guard tablet in the tank. It's really that easy. Rust Guard is safe for plumbing and septic systems, and it will not harm pets. So this fall, don't worry about rust in your toilet bowl. Think Wink, and then log on to wink.com. That's WHINK.com, where you can check out all of the fine cleaning products that make your day a lot easier. And now my thoughts on Samuelson Says. Let me refresh your memory. Remember 3 or 4 years ago when we started to ramp up production of ethanol, there were consumers and consumer groups and even agricultural groups who said, hey, we should not be taking a livestock feed and a human food and putting it into our gas tank. We can't afford food and fuel, so let's quit using corn for energy. And it became a rather intense argument. Even livestock producers joined in saying it's true. And there were other factors involved, of course, including the drought of 2012. But I said then, and I've been saying for a long time, there is not enough food in food to affect the price. There's not enough wheat in a loaf of bread to make the price of that bread move dramatically. Same for corn and cornflakes. And now a study by the Renewable Fuels Association should finally put this food versus fuel myth to bed. The report compared corn prices to the price of dairy, pork, beef, poultry, and egg products from January of 2007 through July of 2014. And here's what the study said. While corn prices have dropped dramatically over the past 2 years, retail food prices of dairy, pork, poultry, eggs, and beef have remained steady or continue to increase. Fluctuations in corn prices do not significantly affect consumer food prices. For example, corn hit a record high of $8.49 a bushel. It's now in the low $3 a bushel. That's well over a 50% drop. Have you seen that kind of a drop in food prices at your local supermarket? Sterling Smith of Citibank chimed in on the report. He said corn prices may have come down 50% from their highs, but that doesn't mean a box of cornflakes will fall 50% in price. Much of the price of food comes from the processing and movement of food. For example, retail ground beef prices have steadily and smoothly trended higher over the past 7 years, showing no obvious response to wide swings in corn prices. Let's put the food versus fuel myth to bed once and for all. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
All right, Big O. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. I tweet, and on our television show, I do a tweet of the week. And this is the one that I set aside this week as the tweet of the week. The scientific literature on the safety of eating genetically modified foods. And it's an infographic that I posted there that shows, well, it shows the government-funded studies, the industry-funded studies, competing industry-funded studies, independent studies, studies that had mixed funding, and studies that had no funding information. And altogether, there were 198 studies, 198 that were cited there. Of those 198 studies, 173 showed that genetically enhanced foods were either healthier or safer than conventional foods, or there was no difference with conventional foods. 173 of the 198. Another 14 of the studies were inconclusive, and only 11 of the 198 studies indicated that genetically modified foods were less healthy or less safe than conventional foods. And in my tweet, I said, I like the odds. I like the odds. Bring them on. So anyway, it's an interesting infographic. Appreciate it if you follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Max Armstrong, of course. We always love visiting with Jim Fazell. We learn from him every time, to be sure.
It's Saturday morning, and we're still in the growing season, though it's winding down. Jim Fazell, consulting horticulturist, joining us here to talk this morning. This is the time of year we get so much bounty coming in. It's still coming in, and maybe as much as ever. I mean, we don't have some of the early season stuff, but we sure do have the apples, the pumpkins, honey, apple cider.
You're right. You know, we are really blessed with abundance, not just this year, but generally in this country, we are blessed with an overabundance. Our farmers do such a good job of producing. It seems like no matter what the weather, they have what we need when we need it. And this is no exception. We have excellent quality this year. We've had a really good growing season. Even though it hasn't been very warm, we haven't had a lot of weather. In fact, here at our offices, we have not had a 90-degree temperature. Of course, west of here they have, because we get lake effect a little bit, keeps it from getting up over 90, but it's really amazing. And we've had a lot of rain. We had almost 2 feet of rain for the summer months. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. So we have a great abundance. And, you know, you can partake of that. We have a lot of farmers here that grow just particularly for people to come out and to get it. We have roadside stands and pick-your-own farms throughout the Chicagoland area, not just in Chicagoland, but out into the surrounding counties. In fact, throughout the state of Illinois, we have a very big pick-your-own and roadside market stand program supported by the state of Illinois. So farmers are able to produce the materials, produce the product, and get it right to the people that want it without any middlemen. A couple of things that saves. First of all, it's time. You get such a fresh product, because if you go to the roadside stand, generally these folks are picking overnight, or at least not before, the day before that. So the product that you get on the roadside stand there is less than 24 hours old. Can't beat that. And then with the pick your own, of course, if you go out there, you pick it yourself. So it's fresh out of the field into your bushel basket and back to your house.
I guess it's been about 20 years, hasn't it? Maybe a little more than that, since the term agritainment came into existence. And we've seen several of our operations where they had, yes, the commercial production of the produce, but they offer more now in the fall. It's an entertainment destination almost.
It really is. Roadside stands right now, of course, they're setting up for Halloween, which is the number one market or number one time of the year for roadside stands, because they have the pumpkins, but they have all kinds of things. They have the entertainment, as you said. A lot of them have petting zoos. They have all kinds of things going on. Of course, most of them have a food stand of some sort. A lot of them have just cider mill donuts. Of course, those are wonderful. But a lot of them actually go to the trouble of having a restaurant of sorts on the property. And then they have a lot of things like rides. I know some of the farms around here have, one of them has a camel ride. Have you ever ridden a camel? I haven't.
You know, we should probably check with some of our friends like the Von Bergens or the Goberts, but I had seen a report out of central Illinois in the pumpkin territory there around Morton, you know, where they have a lot of the canning industry pumpkins that are produced. They said the crop was amazingly good, especially given the fact that it had been a very wet summer. Typically, pumpkins don't like wet years, correct?
That's correct, because they'll get a bacterial disease. It's a soft rot that rots them. And we've had occasions in the past where at this time of the year the crop was magnificent, and then because they weren't properly hardened off, they deteriorated. I don't think that's going to happen this year. These plants have been growing. These pumpkins have been growing in wet weather. The farmers have taken good care to protect them, and that's very important. You can't risk the fact that you're going to get up to the harvest season and have those deteriorate. So they protect them. They spray them if they need to and keep them in good condition so that when they pick them, they're right. Also, we haven't had a lot of hot weather here, but normally we like to have something in the 80-degree range to harden these off. I think they're going to be picked and they're going to be set to where they're going to get some of the warmer temperatures. So I don't think there's going to be any problem with the quality of the pumpkins this year. And, of course, these roadside stands, while the kids are out playing in the petting zoo and so forth, there are a lot of other things that you can do there. Roadside stands have gone marketing. They've decided how you get people to come into the place and how you provide the things that people need. So they have a lot of things like you can buy baked goods there. You can buy honey. We do have a lot of honey producers here in this part of the country.
That brings up an interesting question, too. Is it your impression as well, Jim, that the honey industry is on the rebound after all of the challenges they've had with colony collapse disorder, varroa mites? I saw a report out of South Dakota, which is the number two honey-producing state in America, and they said the production was about twice as great this summer as in a normal summer, which leads you to believe maybe the bees like a cooler summer too. But I just wondered what you had heard.
Well, I've talked to a producer that we know that comes to the farmers market here in our town, and he has said the same thing. He said that the production has been excellent, and part of that's because there's so many flowers. We've had a moist year, a lot of flowers, and of course bees, you know, a worker bee doesn't live very long. It has to eat, and it eats voraciously because they'll fly miles, and it takes miles and miles of travel by bees in order to just get 1 pound of honey. So the fact that there have been plenty of flowers around has allowed them to get plenty of stuff. So the hives are big, they're growing, all the bees are being fed. And I think that by and large, the hive collapse, nobody knows for sure what causes that. My suspicion after talking to a lot of people is that there are a lot of things that cause it, and they all get together at one time, and sometimes you have all of these factors in place at the same time, so you really have collapse. But I also know some people that are amateur bee raisers, and they have had pretty good success.
There, folks are often surprised to hear that the top honey-producing states in America are North and South Dakota, but there's a lot of harboring of the bees there, and then they get transported, right? I mean, there's a huge movement, truckload after truckload, to California every year.
There are. They go down there for the almonds to start with, and they go through all the flowering fruit down there, and they move their way back. It's not just California, but as soon as they can get back over the mountains and things start happening in Colorado, alfalfa, for instance, is big right in Colorado. They follow the crops, and they finally get back to the Dakotas, and that's where they produce the honey. Strangely enough, it's cold up there, but the hives are able to survive up there. And there again, they take good care of them. They protect the hives. They make sure that the hives have plenty of honey for the winter so the bees can survive. They have to eat all winter. They don't go dormant. They keep themselves warm by eating, and they shiver. That's what they do to keep themselves warm.
Every now and then you'll hear of one of those truckloads of bees turning over somewhere out there, and they have a real challenge reining them all in. As I recall, one time a trucker friend of mine indicated he had hauled some of these long distances, that the key was to try to spray the load if you needed to try to calm them down a little bit, spray it with a mist of water.
Right, you calm them down, cool them down. If they're cold, they don't move. They're cold-blooded animals, and if you keep them cold, they get sluggish. So then you can do something with them. The other thing that's very interesting, you know, so many people talk about bee stings, and they're worried about bees if they have a cluster of bees that happens to be in a tree. They're not going to sting anybody. The people that get stung around here get stung by yellow jackets. It's a wasp, not a bee. So you don't need to be afraid of them. They're wonderful, wonderful creatures, and they're friends of ours.
You know, I recall that photograph taken by the famed photographer Richard Avedon of our friend Ron Fisher, Ron the Bee Man, who was here in the Chicago area for many, many years. He's out near the Mississippi River now, I believe, in Rock Island County, still keeping bees. I just saw him a few days ago. But in that photograph, that stark photograph, Ron didn't have a shirt on, and the top of his torso and his face, top of his head, his ears, he was covered in bees. And it was no problem. He was accustomed to that.
Right. I remember as I was a youngster, I had a relative that lived down in Champaign, Illinois, right across from the beekeeping facility down there where they taught beekeeping. And the professor would come out, and I can vividly remember him doing the same thing. He would come out and have a beard of bees. I was only 4 or 5 years old, but that really impressed me. I've never forgotten it.
Jim, always great to talk to you. Thanks for taking the time, and thanks for your expertise and counsel all summer long. It means a lot to us.
Well, I enjoyed doing it. We didn't get to talk too much about roadside stands, but go out and visit one this weekend and enjoy it.
Great advice. Absolutely. Mr. Jim Fazell, 9 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show from WGN Radio. The combines are rolling these days. The yield monitors are ticking away. The reports are coming in. I'm seeing it tweeted. I'm seeing Facebook postings of yield monitors. I'm getting emails from producers. You know, the numbers are good, but I haven't heard too many reports where farmers were just wowed, saying, oh, man, this is stunning. This is awesome. This is unbelievable. Of course, our expectations have been so high. But Dale Dirkholz with AgriVisor, based in Bloomington, Illinois, he stopped by the studio this week, and he made an interesting point about this crop.
You know, the one thing we've got to take home about this crop compared to, let's say, a lot of crops that we have through the years that look like a good crop, this is uniformly really good across the broad area. So that's going to have some positive repercussions on yield. But we got to remember at the same time at this point, we started the bar with a new record yield from the USDA, and we've only lifted that through the first series of crop reports. So we've got to be careful about not thinking this crop just keeps getting better and better and better, although the yield, I think, ultimately could be revised up a little bit, but I don't think there's that much left on top anymore.
We have that crop report coming up 2 weeks away. You're not expecting any reduction in crop size, are you?
You know, the thing that we don't know is what USDA is going to do with acreage. Traditionally, we've had them come in, make some adjustments on their acreage numbers on the October report, but now there's all these questions about the FSA numbers, and, you know, are they behind getting them input, and, you know, are they going to be really usable by the USDA when they put out the October report? I think the yield can go up a little bit on this report, and I don't think it'll go up a lot. Maybe we could add another bushel. But the question in my mind is, what happens with acreage? And we've got to remember, every million acres is the equivalent of 2 bushels. So, you know, we could end up actually, if they make an adjustment on acreage, with a production number that actually might go down just a little bit, even if they would raise yield.
There's Dale Dirkholz. Yeah, cut that guy off that was starting to talk. Well, who's that guy? Dale Dirkholz, AgriVisor Service, Bloomington, Illinois, when he came into the studio earlier this week. Looking forward to next weekend, Oregon, Illinois. Yeah, we'll be there for the Autumn on Parade, a week from this Sunday. That'll be on Sunday the 5th. And we'll have the Farm All Super M out there. I'll be driving that in the Autumn on Parade. Buddy Ben Ipers is going to arrange to have the tractor there, and it'll be there for the tractor show. Also on Saturday, I'll be there too. I'll come out there probably around noon on Saturday for the Audubon Parade. They have a tractor show and car show, and those classic tractors and cars go on display about 9 o'clock in the morning. We look forward to seeing our old friend Stan Eden, very much a fixture in the community there of Oregon, Illinois. Neat little community where the population expands dramatically for a couple of days every October for Autumn on Parade.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings, afternoons, and nights, and catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m., only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.